If we were on an airplane, this is when the buckle your seatbelt sign would come on. I just want you all to know that. But Jesus spoke to them and said, "But I say to you that listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also. And from anyone who takes away your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. Give to everyone who begs from you, and if anyone takes away your goods, do not ask for them again. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do the same. If you lend to those from whom you hope to receive, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much again. But love your enemies. Do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. Your reward will be great. And you will be children of the Most High, for He is kind to the ungrateful and the wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure you give will be the measure you get back." The word of the Lord for the people of God. Thanks be to God. I think before I even get started or try to say anything, there are a few things that I need you to know. I need you to know this before I get started. First off, this is probably Jesus' most challenging and difficult teaching. This is not an easy thing to do. Love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. Give without expecting to have it returned to you. If someone slaps you on the cheek, turn also the other. Do not withhold your shirt if someone takes your coat. These are not easy words. Because they're not easy words, the next thing I want you to know is I'm not sure if I've ever met someone that has lived and fulfilled all of this teaching. There are certainly those who do these things more often. But no one, I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, I don't think anyone truly lives this teaching day in and day out. I certainly do not. I'll add that in passing. All of these things that I'm saying that this teaching is about, I don't want you to think that I do all of these things. That is not the case. I can certainly think of situations where people have done similar things, but there always seems to be a time where that is no longer the case or a situation that it might not exactly fit into this. Now, to go along with that, sort of the other side of this is that because it is a difficult teaching, because this is very challenging, because so few of us are able to do it, that also means that it's easy to be misconstrued. This is a teaching that can be easily abused. And these teachings have been abused. These words from Jesus have been used to continue or justify abuse and harm to other people. So, as I try to make sense of these words, I need you to know that none of my words should be construed to encourage or justify or tell a person that they need to stay in an abusive situation, perhaps. Pray for those who abuse you. Jesus says this. This should never be said to an individual who is experiencing intimate partner abuse. These are not words that should ever be spoken to people who are experiencing sexual abuse or anything of that nature. These words should never be spoken to someone experiencing continued abuse. And these words have been said to people who are experiencing continued abuse before. That needs to be spoken. I do not ever intend for my words to come across that way. Having said that, this is a challenging passage. I was not lying to the kids to say that I'm not quite sure what to do with it, both because it has been abused in the past and because it is so challenging. Jesus says to us, love your enemies. Who are our enemies? One of the stories that I think of when I hear this passage is the story of those parents, those Mormon parents of the children that were killed at the school, what was it, up in Pennsylvania a number of years ago. It's this beautiful story of the parents of these murdered children offering forgiveness and grace and mercy to the parents of the shooter. This feels like an important thing, an incredible example of loving your enemies. And then I think, you know, perhaps they're not their enemies. The parents of the shooter are not the enemies of the parents of the slain children. So perhaps it's not a great example of loving your enemies. I think also of that story, I believe it was in during World War I, that Christmas evening when both sides left the trenches and had a Christmas feast with one another. I think they played soccer together and all too. It was this beautiful, love your enemies. Of course, the next day they got back to killing each other. This didn't really work for very long. Surely for a few hours they were loving their enemies and setting these things aside, but they got right back to it. How do we love our enemies? How do we do good to those who hate us, bless those who curse us, pray for those who abuse you? Now, one of the difficult things for me, I think, is I will just name who I am. I'm a straight white man. Not too many people hate me. I've got it pretty good in this life. I don't have to worry about being profiled very often. My favorite story of the one time that I was profiled, I hope you all get a kick out of this, will be a little humorous for a second. When I worked at the daycare in Crawfordsville, Indiana, every now and then I would work with the small children in the twos classroom. They would take a nap and then they would wake up, and after nap time it was time to change diapers. Now, I was told I was not allowed to change diapers. It was apparently a state law that men could not change diapers. Even when I'm discriminated against, I can't complain about it. I got to play with the kids on the mats as they woke up while the other teachers changed diapers. Oh, woe is me. It's too bad. It's difficult for me to imagine people hating me, to imagine my enemies. Things seem to work out. So what do we do? I'm not necessarily the person to answer these questions. I wonder, though, who my enemies might be. I don't want to make up enemies. I don't want to create enemies, but I also do know my friends. I got a wonderful hoodie this past week, and I've been wearing it every day this week that I can. I've never played D&D, but it's a D&D Dungeons and Dragons sweatshirt. It says, when one of our party is attacked, we all roll for initiative. And it's got different symbols on it in the forms of these dice that are used in D&D, some of them with different flags on it. There's a rainbow flag. There's a trans person flag. There's a person of color flag with a raised fist. When we attack, when one of the party is attacked, we all roll for initiative. I know who my friends are. I think if I were to pick an enemy, it would be someone who has named themselves an enemy of my friends. How's that sound? Can I start from there? If you dislike my friends, my gay or lesbian or transgendered friends, and you are making yourself their enemy, wishing that they did not exist, I think I'll call you my enemy as well. So let me start from there. If these people are my enemies, how might I love them? How might I do good to these people that want to harm my friends? Now, admittedly, I'm not going to be the one who is struck on the cheek. I'm the straight white guy. People don't tend to hit me, but my friends have been hit. How might I help in these situations? If someone takes your coat, do not withhold even your shirt. A lot has been given to me. I have a coat to give. I have plenty of shirts to share. If someone wants to take my coat, they may have it. I have plenty. Let me give you my shirt also. When I get back home, I'll put on another one. I'll grab another coat out of the closet. This is not an issue for me. But what do we do with those folks who only have one coat? What do we do with the folks that can only afford Medicaid or Medicare, and that is taken from them? Do we expect them to give also something else? How do we hear Jesus' words, take them seriously, and do good? Do to others as you would have them do to you. The golden rule. I think that might have been one of the first rules I learned. Do to others as you would have them do to you. The way that we treat other people should reflect the way in which we want to be treated. Now that helps me understand these situations. That helps me understand Jesus' teachings here. If someone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other. I don't want to be hit, so why would I hit you back? I don't want you to take my coat, so why would I fight you and take my coat back? I want to be treated a certain way, so let me also live this way and treat you the same way. Now, this is a point where we can help do a little bit of our context work and see if it helps us out. When Jesus starts talking about giving to those without expecting them to return it to you, sharing things without expecting it to come back, Jesus is operating within his own cultural norms. Much of the culture of Jesus' time was based on reciprocity. I butchered that word, didn't I? They're giving back, right? Reciprocating. Giving things back. If you gave something to someone, you expected an equal valued gift in return. If you threw a party and you invited someone and you had a great feast, you expected to be invited to their party with an equally fine feast. Don't come over to somebody's Christmas party and then invite them over for McDonald's. You understand? There was an expectation that the gifts we give, both good and bad, would be returned in equal value. Perhaps greater if we wanted to one-up one another. This was the expectation. When Jesus demands and suggests and teaches his followers to turn that around, give without expecting something in return, he is turning those expectations upside down. When Jesus says, even the sinners do these things, when even the sinners love other sinners, even the sinners give and expect to be given back, everybody does this. This is the context. This is the way that things are done. If you are my followers, you will not do that. You will do differently. you will live and give and receive in different ways than what the culture expects you to. But culture is hard to get away from. Jesus, yes, is turning the cultural expectations on its head. Do not expect the return to come from those you give to. But even Jesus cannot escape this foundational understanding. Yes, you might not get it back in this world, and I expect you to give without expecting to receive. But know that when you do these things, your reward will be great. You will be the children of God. Your gifts that you give without expecting to be given returned to you from human hands will be delivered to you from the Most High. God will give back to you. In some ways, and this is where I want to be careful not to abuse this teaching and this passage, in some way it almost sounds like it's a banking system. Give and you receive. You've earned your reward here on this planet, Jesus has said in other places. But if you give here on this planet and you give to others who cannot give back, you're accumulating these gifts from God in heaven. Can you imagine how that might be abused? Pour out of yourself to others, whether they are grateful or return those good things back to you, knowing that God will give you more in the kingdom of heaven. Give and give and give until you have nothing left to give, because God will bless you. We can forget that Jesus also calls us to change this world. It is easy, as Jesus says here, give to everyone who begs from you. We can roll down that window and pass those quarters and those dollars to every single person that begs from us. But Jesus also asks us to wonder why they're there. Jesus also expects us to wonder and work to making sure that they're no longer there on that corner begging from you. It's not simply enough to give and give and give, thinking that our reward will be great in heaven if we're not also working here on this planet and on this earth to do good. Finally, Jesus says, do not judge and you will not be judged. Do not condemn and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. This is one of my favorite things to point out to the kids as we're working through the Lord's Prayer and remembering those words. Jesus says that we should be forgiven as we are forgiven. I feel like the ABCs, where if you don't start from the beginning, you're going to mess it up. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. Is that a good thing or is that a challenge? Forgive us, God, because we've already forgiven others. Or are we really saying, God, forgive us in the same way that we forgive others? I don't want to pray it that way sometimes. God, you remember that way that I forgave my ex-wife? I want you to forgive me the same way. Ooh, I'm in trouble. I'm in trouble. Right? Remember the way that I forgave my friend? God, I want you to forgive me the same way. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. A good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For the measure that you give will be the measure that you give back. Again, let's not get distracted by some banking exchange system between God and us and the planet. But let us remember that when we follow these words to the best of our ability, when we're able to forgive even our enemies, when we're able to do good and to love those who hate us, when we're able to bless those who curse us, when we turn those expectations upside down, loving those who hate us, praying and blessing those who curse us, not condemning even those who condemn us, forgiving those who even will not forgive us. When we turn those things upside down, we are doing the will of God. And there's something to be said for doing the will of God. It does not always work out here on this planet. There's still going to be bullies that are slapping people on the cheek, no matter how many times somebody turns the other. There's still going to be people who steal coats, no matter how many shirts they've been given. But when we do what Jesus asks us to do, as hard and as difficult and impossible as it can be, we're doing the will of God. And that counts for something. Either we trust God or we don't. We trust God's promise, or we trust in the might of this world and the culture and expectations of our society. As impossible and hard as it is, may we at least try to do the will of God. Amen.